The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good morning, all bodies assembled, and welcome to the Thursday edition of the Brad Sessmatt Show. Surprise, it's not Brad, it's Jeff Munn, and delighted to be with you today. Yep, they do have my Twitter handle on there, at Moneyball. We're a Thursday edition of the Brad Sessmatt Show, and as is usually the case, a lot of fun things to look forward to. First of all, I'm going to get the fun stuff out of the way in regards to me, first of all. I always like to identify who I am because I realize there may be some of you out there who don't know me. And trust me, that's a pretty large club. But I am the radio voice of Arizona State University women's basketball. I have been, and will, until further notice, will continue to be the stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC. And I did add something to my resume this week that I'm very excited about. Radio voice of the Arizona Hotshots of the Alliance of American Football. If we have time today, we'll talk about that a little bit. I know Brad has talked about it a little bit, too, because Brad's also going to be involved, which I'm very, very happy about. And so there's a lot of fun things to look forward to in regards to February through April of next year with the Arizona Hotshots. We obviously have our usual Thursday attraction, Goody at the Movies. AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Gutekunst will take a look back at the best movies in his view from 2018 are some of the most noteworthy movies. And we're going to get into a discussion about the Monday Night Football crew. And I know that there's been a lot discussed about it, but a new poll out this week is not very flattering toward the Monday Night Football crew, and we'll get into that with Goody. We'll talk baseball with Steve Gilbert, D-backs beat writer for MLB.com. This continual dialogue or narrative about Paul Goldschmidt getting traded, I think it's going to reach a conclusion, perhaps, at the winter meetings coming up in a couple of weeks. We'll find out about that from Steve. We'll find out where Patrick Corbin may be heading. And is A.J. Pollock going to find the deal he really wants out there? If he's looking for 5 years and $80 million, how easy is it going to be for him to get that kind of deal? We'll discuss it all with Steve. We are joined, as always, by our friend Eric Sorensen, the man who's really in charge of things around here, no matter what Brad tries to tell you. Let me see if the e-box, let me use the powers of my mind.
Ta-da!
There it is! The e-box has arrived.
Devin Henry creates the e-box.
I'll take Eric Sorensen to block.
Yeah, there we go, right? The Brady Bunch, all we need is like a couple more on this side and a couple more on that.
Do you know
that
they have now?
You could be looking up at
I know
whoever that is or looking down or whatever.
I was in Las Vegas last weekend.
Oh, your favorite place.
For work purposes, of course. Do you know they have a Brady Bunch slot machine now?
Ooh, which casino resort is that?
I saw it at Harrah's.
Nice.
My daughter and I were doing, before we left town on Sunday, we did some holiday shopping. And we were walking through Harrah's, and I saw this Brady Bunch slot machine, and I thought, okay, I've seen everything now. It's just that, you know, they do slot machines about movies, TV series. Now they got one for the Brady Bunch. In any event, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am good. It's we've been on kind of a whirlwind. I was just telling somebody here about I got to tell the story about my 3-hour trip to San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. That was one for the books, trust me. If I ever do write a book, there'll be a chapter about that trip in there. But
let me guess, on a plane, off a plane, in a car. Wait, hold on.
You got it so far.
In an airport, on a plane, off a plane, in an airport, on a plane, in an airport, in a car, in an airport, on a plane, in an airport? Is that
pretty close?
Within a span of...
In 30 seconds, when ASU was going to play San Francisco, I was supposed to fill in on that game for Tim because football was going to Oregon. That was at the height of these awful wildfires, and certainly our thoughts still go out to the people in Northern California. When I got to the WeatherUp Center, we were going to take a bus to the airport, take a commercial flight to San Francisco. There was already talk this game was not going to happen, but what the team was planning to do was take a flight on Friday. But they said to Kyle Dodd and myself, it'd probably be easier if you guys just go ahead and go now. Go on to the hotel. Wait till you hear from us. So we took the flight, landed at about 5 p.m. Pacific time. This is 2 weeks ago today. And when I looked out the window of the plane, I said, we're not playing anymore. The air was just awful. And there was nothing in the weather forecast that was going to suggest that things were going to get cleaned up. But they had not postponed the game. So Kyle and I get our bags, get in a lift. We're going toward the hotel in downtown San Francisco. And about 10 minutes into the lift ride comes the email. The game's been postponed. And Doug Tamaro, the outstanding basketball publicist at ASU, sent us a text message that simply said, come home. So I get on my app, find a Southwest flight out of Oakland, called my boss with the network, said, we ain't staying here and sucking in this air. This is just bad. And he said, no problem. Get the plane booked. Just expense it. We found a 9:30 flight out of Oakland. When we got to the airport, there was an 8 o'clock nonstop to Phoenix. I said, can we get on it? It was 7 o'clock. Lady said, sure. Boom. Done. So we were in San Francisco for about 2.5 hours. That's it.
Wow.
And it was just, I pulled into my apartment parking garage at about 11:30 that night. And I have never been through a day like that in my life. I mean, I've done day trips, but that's, and yeah, it was just a crazy day. Let's get to what's going on in sports, and it's brought to you by Sagicor Life Insurance. When Brad talks about Sagicor, and one thing he always says is, you know, planning for the future. It's really easy when you're much younger than myself to say to yourself, oh, do I really need to do that? We oftentimes look at things like financial planning as kind of a nuisance until something happens. And then you say, there are too many people in this life that say, I wish I'd planned for this. So don't be one of those people. Plan for it now. And you'll find that it's not a nuisance. It's actually very affordable. And it gives you something you can't put a price on, peace of mind. Go to Sagicor now. They'll tell you, they'll be happy to explain all the ways that you can make certain that your family's protected in case something happens to you. And don't be one of those people that say, oh, it'll never happen to me, because you and I both know it very well could. Suns lost last night in Los Angeles to the Clippers, 115-99. Second game of a back-to-back, a 40-point third quarter for the Clippers essentially put the game out of reach. And just looking at some of the stats from last night, Devin Booker, 23 points, 4 assists. As a team, the Suns had 4 players with 4 assists each. And I'm just looking at this, Eric, and I'm thinking to myself, most NBA teams, you're not real happy if the assist. It's one thing if you have like 5 or 6 players in double figures and a coach says, gee, the scoring was distributed evenly. If it's assist, I don't think that's as good a thing. If you've got a starting forward with 4 assists, your point guard has 4 assists, your backup forward has, 2 other guards off the bench with 4 assists. That, what that says to me is they really don't have a point guard at the moment. And they don't, because Isaiah Cannon was released yesterday. So it's a bit of an issue for the Suns. But as I say, and the Clippers very quietly have become the number one team in terms of winning percentage in the Western Conference, in the Pacific Division. So it's like, how did that happen? But in any event, Suns will host Orlando tomorrow night. ASU with a win at home over Nebraska Omaha, and they moved to 6-0 on the year. I tell you, the interesting thing to me, or the uplifting thing to me, was that was not a healthy Sun Devil basketball team last night. No Remy Martin, no Mitchell in the game last night, and it took them a little while to kind of get their footing under them. Omaha, Nebraska Omaha, was a little too dominant inside in the early going, but the Devils did wear him down, pulled away to a big victory, 89-71, 50-point first half. Zylan Cheatham, among other things, was finished an assist short of the second triple-double in school history. There were some real highlight dunks during the game. Cherry finished with 19 points, Lugans Dort with 19. Lugans Dort can play, and he had 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Cheatham, we mentioned he just narrowly missed a triple-double. 13 points, 12 rebounds, 9 assists. Cards are at Packers Sunday. And it really, it's we're kind of down to a point where it's been well explained that Packers are up against it in terms of they've got to win out to get to the playoffs, to have any shot at the playoffs. But even so, I think their chances are extremely remote. The weather forecast not too promising in Green Bay, so it's going to be a pretty challenging afternoon for the Cardinals, who've had a slew of challenges. And we have a college football weekend to look forward to, the conference championship games. I'm going to have some thoughts a little bit later on the show if we have time. I heard an interesting take about the college football playoff that I had not considered, and it is somewhat changing my mind about whether or not this playoff ought to be expanded. And I know that sounds strange. If we have time, we'll get into it a little bit. But the key games, I think, in terms of how the playoff field shake out, are the SEC championship, Alabama, Georgia, the Big Ten championship, Ohio State and Northwestern, and the Big 12 championship between Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma's only loss was to Texas. And so if Texas were to beat them again, that should clear up the picture a little bit, or maybe it doesn't. So it's going to be those people who think that this is all set in stone, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and whatever. I don't know how they get to Ohio State. But in any event, we'll discuss that a little bit further later on in the show. Up next, Steve Gilbert. Is Paul Goldschmidt going to be traded? The better question may be, when is he going to be traded? That's next on the Brad Sesmatch Show on Sports360AZ.com. Back we go to the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. Jeff Munn for Brad, and in the midst of the football and the basketball going on, there's a lot of baseball talk. It is the hot stove time of year, and so a good time for us to bring on our friend Steve Gilbert, D-backs beat writer for MLB.com, loyal Sun Devil. I thought your salary, you could afford better tickets than the nosebleed section in Wells Fargo Arena. I was shocked at that last night, Steve.
I like to sit up with the average fan and get a better perspective on that, Munster. I don't sit down with the high rollers like you do.
Oh, okay, there. Here we go. He spotted me sitting with a certain former attorney general.
It could be the next senator from the state of Arizona.
We don't know, and I didn't ask him about that. Yeah, wink, wink.
I always said I wanted ASU to have a competitive basketball program, and now that they do, I felt like last year and this year it was time to put my money where my mouth was, so I have full season tickets.
Attaboy, I like that. I like that. You know, this whole thing with Goldie being traded kind of reminds me of how I felt in 2013, going into January of 2013. And I was working for the club at the time, and I had just gotten to the point where I was up to here with the Justin Upton trade rumors, and I really was of a mindset, just trade him already. If you're going to trade him, trade him. Then I saw the trade, and I thought, wait a minute. I didn't want that. I'm getting there with Goldschmidt rumors. And it's funny because it hasn't lingered out there as long as the Upton trade rumors lingered. But it sure sounds to me, Steve, and I read articles over the weekend on MLB.com, I'm reading stuff today, that the winter meetings in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas, we better get geared up to have something monumental happen.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think that the Justin Upton situation from 2013, as good a job as Kevin Towers did with a number of things, handling the Justin Upton trade talks was not one of those things. And they did drag on, and it did get to a point where they absolutely had to trade Justin Upton because there had been so much of a toxic thing going on that offseason. The difference in the Goldschmidt thing, I think, is, like you said, we should be gearing up for something in the next few weeks if it's going to happen with Goldie. And if it doesn't happen within a little time after the winter meetings, I think then it's going to be kind of a done issue and he's going to be back if he's not traded. Because I don't think they're going to let it linger. I don't think they want to do that, and I think they're going to move on to do whatever other moves they might make instead of doing that. So another thing to keep in mind is where it got to the point where they were just going to trade Upton, and it was a matter of, okay, who's got the best offer? You know, here we go. With Goldie, they don't feel a need to trade him. You know, they're looking at it from a baseball perspective and saying, okay, they want one more year with him. So maybe we get back some talent in return for him before he leaves via free agency. But if they don't get the package that they want, and listen, I know the package is not going to be what fans expect, We can get into that too at some point. But if they don't get the package they want, they're not going to trade him. They don't feel a need to trade him, and they'll be happy to hang on to him.
That leads to two things, and we're talking to Steve Gilbert, D-backs beat writer for MLB.com, and I want to get to the other players that have been discussed in the hot stove as well, but let's just play it out hypothetically. We go through the meetings, there's no trade, and we go to February to pitchers and catchers, and Goldie is still a D-back. Well, let me rewind. Let's go back just out of the winter meetings. If there's no trade and the D-backs say to themselves, okay, we're going to hang on to him, does that change? Does Hazen now decide, okay, I'm going to go look at some complementary pieces because we're going to take one more run at this? Or does he just say, look, we're going to go along with the other things we plan to do and we'll revisit a Goldschmidt trade heading to July 31st?
I think that's more likely. And I think that the second scenario you painted there, and I think, you know, I posed this to Mike when I talked with him a couple of weeks ago, that it seems like with their off season, it's like he's standing in a room with a bunch of different domino chains. And if he touches one domino, it starts this chain. If he touches another domino, it starts a different chain. So trading Goldschmidt then would lead to other dominoes falling. Not trading Goldschmidt leads to maybe a different tack that they would take. I think they're going to try to thread the needle here and not do a full rebuild and not trade away the farm system to try to, you know, win in 2019, but try to be competitive in 2019 while also kind of retooling a little bit. And that's a real difficult balance to kind of pull off, and I'm going to be very curious to see if this front office is able to do that.
Well, that would seem to suggest that the other big name that has been rumored, obviously, the Zach Greinke rumors, if they took that path of trying to maintain a competitive team in 2019, then they got to hang on to Greinke because he makes them more competitive.
That is very true, and I think one other thing, though, to keep in mind is if they could move that money, that frees up $34 million a year if another team picks up his full deal. And that's the money that they could spend maybe to improve the team in other ways, either via free agency or a trade to pick up a contract that another team can't afford. So would they like to trade Zach Greinke? I think certainly they would like to be out from underneath that contract. That would give them a lot more flexibility in the next 3 years. I think it's going to be very difficult to do. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say one other thing about the Goldschmidt rumors. Sports Illustrated's John Taylor is suggesting, this is not something, I guess he's throwing this out there as a hypothetical, that the Cardinals would be a great partner and that a deal that would include Jose Martinez, who's a big slugging first baseman who has a tendency to strike out a little too much for a lot of people's liking, but he's very athletic, would be an attractive option for the D-backs. I look at that and I think, yeah, you know what? Jose Martinez is a guy you could plug in immediately at first base having their opening day. That's not a bad way to go. So and I've heard the Cardinals mentioned a great deal as a possible partner.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals are a possible partner for Goldie. I think the Astros are a possible partner for Goldie. Both teams are kind of looking to upgrade at first base. Both teams could afford the, you know, $14 million or whatever it is that he's making this year. And both teams, you know, have trade pieces that would be of interest, I think, to the Diamondbacks. They do have some younger players on both of those teams. So I think those are two possible trade partners. You know, getting back to Greinke, trading him is, I think, less likely than Goldschmidt because that contract is difficult to trade. And Zach has 15 teams on a no-trade list. So you say, oh, well, that's great. There's 15 teams you could trade him to. Well, typically what players do, and I believe Zach has done, although not all the teams have been named publicly, is that he has the 15 teams on his no-trade list that not necessarily he doesn't want to go there, but the teams that could afford that contract.
Right.
So essentially, that 15-team no-trade clause becomes almost a 29-other-team no-trade clause. I mean, I would guess the Rays probably aren't on that, but I don't think you'd ever see the Rays want to pick up a contract of $34 million a year.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that.
That's kind of a shrewd move on his part, is to kind of, you know, that then if they want to deal him, you know, he could easily ask whatever team is trading for him for an extension, for more money, whatever it might be.
True. That's a very good point. Let me hit a couple of the other players that are out there looking for, and it's obvious they're looking for new homes. Patrick Corbin. Now, the Yankees picked up James Paxton from Seattle, but are the Yankees still in play? And given what we're hearing, too, about the Mets, that they're shopping their star pitchers, they're trying to get into position to move their process of returning to contention up a little bit. We always assume that it's the Yankees because Patrick Corbin's from New York. The Mets are located in New York, too. Are they a possibility at all?
You know, maybe. He's in New York today, according to Joel Sherman and some other reports, visiting with the Yankees. He met with the Nationals yesterday. He met with the Phillies before that. Seems to be that East Coast swing for him. And I heard Ken Rosenthal on MLB at Hot Stove this morning, MLB Network, saying that he thinks Corbin could get possibly more than the $126 million that Yu Darvish got last offseason.
Wow.
So I think it becomes quickly understandable why he's not going to be back in a Diamondbacks uniform almost, 100% for sure he's not going to be next year.
I got about a minute left. A.J. Pollock, if I understood the story correctly, hopes to get 5 years, $80 million. If that's the case, and I'm a GM that's interested in him, and there would be a lot of GMs interested in him, I would look at his injury history and say, I don't know if I can do 5 years, $80 million. I may do a two-year deal, and you show me you can stay healthy. Is that what he's going to find out there?
I think it's going to be interesting to see how the market plays out this year. Last year's market was not necessarily friendly to outfielders, and J.D. Martinez kind of found that out. So I think his injury history certainly is something that would cause a little bit of pause. But it only takes one team, Munster, as you know, that to be desperate for a guy to make a big splash. So I think probably 5 years might be a lot, but again, let's see how the market plays itself out this year.
I got one other thing, kind of a lightning round question. MLB.com, one of their writers, I think it was Anthony Castrovince, and I'm mispronouncing his name, I think.
Castrovince.
There you go. He floated the idea that the Nationals might kick the tires on a deal involving Robbie Ray, and I'm thinking, there's no way the D-backs would do that, right?
I guess it would depend on what other dominoes are falling. Are you in a complete rebuild? If you're in a complete rebuild and you can get a bunch of young players for him, maybe you do. He's got 2 years left of control, I believe it is. So, I mean, again, that would be more of a total teardown than just a retooling if you get rid of a guy like Robbie Ray.
No question. Well, look, I know you're going to be at the winter meetings in a couple weeks in Vegas. This could work out very well for you. You go to the winter meetings, you hang out for a couple days, and if ASU's in the Las Vegas Bowl, you got it made. You can go watch a football game.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be that weekend, too. So
that's right.
I don't think I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I appreciate it, my friend. There's a breakfast coming in our future. Let's make it happen.
All right, you play to win the game, Munster.
You got that right. You got that right. Thanks, Steve. Talk to you
later,
soon.
Jeff.
Steve
Bye-bye.
Gilbert, outstanding D-backs beat writer for MLB.com. These winter meetings, you remember 3 years ago, the winter meetings got real interesting involving the D-backs because of the Greinke signing and the Shelby Miller trade. And I've expressed my thoughts on this subject a number of times in the past. I don't think we need to go into it any further, but I give a lot of credit to Mike Hazen. He's doing something that is really difficult to do, especially when you've got an owner that is very much in a win-now mentality. So I give him a lot of credit for being able to convince his bosses that there's a certain path they have to take, and we'll see if they really do get started on it here. I think the winter meetings will give us most of those answers. I had some thoughts about the college football playoff. It was an interesting thought that was brought up the other day on television. I'm not going to take credit for it. We'll cover that. We'll talk a little bit about where I think ASU will be playing football and why we have to wait to get the answer. And we'll do all that right after you get back from a break on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Yes, you do have to go to a break and come back on sports360az.com. This weekend is, as they say, the big weekend. It's not, what's the term? Well, it's the last time that the college football playoff contenders can make their case before the committee, and which includes, by the way, our friend Paula Bovin, will make their final determination on who are the four teams that will play for college football's national championship come late December into early January. Let me just, for one thing, let me just tell you, I do work with the Fiesta Bowl, so I have a vested interest in this, and I love the bowls. I love bowl games. I love the Fiesta. I love the Cheez-It Bowl. I think anything where you get big-name college football programs, and I'm going to be multitasking here as I'm talking to you because I want to get the latest bowl projections from Jerry Palm at CBSSports.com. But Eric Hansen's a guy I used to work with. Eric Sorensen's a guy I work with. I'm surprised after all these years that it took today for me to make that mistake. So I apologize,
Eve. It's okay. Two Scandinavian names can be
this is true.
Mixed up.
I heard an interesting point the other day, and I'm going to give credit where credit is due. It was on that ratings juggernaut, Get Up, on ESPN, which I hear is gaining more viewers now. But just the same, Mike Greenberg made this point. We really don't need to expand the playoff because what we're doing this weekend is a playoff. Ohio State Northwestern in the Big Ten title game is a playoff game. If Ohio State loses, they're out. Oklahoma Texas. If Texas beats Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game, bye bye Sooners.
Georgia Alabama.
If Georgia loses, that they're done.
Correct.
If Alabama loses, I don't think that hurts them.
Correct.
It knocks them down.
Correct.
The other key game, of course, is the ACC title game, Clemson and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a nasty little habit of pulling upsets, and they've done it to Clemson a couple of times.
I don't see that happening this weekend.
Well, I'm not ready to write it in pen. I'm going to write it in pencil that's the way it's going to go.
Ohio State's really up against it, though, because they're playing Northwestern, and if they don't win by four or five touchdowns, people are going to be like, oh, well, they should have beaten a far inferior team. And we know Ohio State at times struggles against teams that they should.
Purdue.
Maryland. They should pound. But this is a different beast because it's the Big Ten championship game, and Ohio State almost always performs well on that stage.
They do, and they've had some real they've taken full advantage of it in years past and run teams out of Lucas Oil Stadium, which I believe is where they're still playing that game.
And it's not Ohio State's fault. The other side of the Big Ten is so bad.
No,
by
the same token, if Washington State had won the Apple Cup last weekend, playing Utah wasn't going to do them a lot of good.
Nope.
Not that they had a chance to begin with. I was hoping against hope, but it's just not going to
happen. And
money,
that's a topic for a completely another show. Why the Pac-12 is just so bad.
I know. And there was a writer who wrote a pretty scathing little article about the structure of the Pac-12 at the moment, and we can get into that down the road. But don't you agree with that assessment? I've always been a proponent of let's go to eight teams. Eight teams, the five big boy conference winners, three at-large spots that allow you to put in a Central Florida, a Notre Dame, if Northern Illinois has a great season and runs the table.
Well, let's not lump Notre Dame in with Central Florida and Northern Illinois.
But no, I mean, an independent who does not have a conference affiliation.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Notre Dame doesn't really need a conference. They're Notre Dame.
What I'm saying is,
for them to get in, they're going to get in.
If you just take conference winners, then Notre Dame's out.
Gotcha.
But I kind of agree with Mike Greenberg when he said, "What we're doing this weekend is a playoff weekend." These are playoff games.
I think eventually it's going to get fatiguing if you're seeing two to three teams every year that are in the playoff. And we've seen that with Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State. And if Oklahoma gets back again, it'll be Oklahoma again. It's not those schools' fault. But I think for average Joe college football fan, they're just going to be like, oh, wow, Clemson, Alabama again.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I don't agree with this assertion that, well, they can't expand it because of contracts. ESPN would fall all over themselves for an 8-team playoff. So if there's...
Yeah, and I think it's dumb. Why can't you extend the season a little bit? Like, why can't they play games in mid-January?
There are seven bowls or seven games that make up the New Year's Six. If you go to an 8-team playoff, you have four bowls in the first round, two in the second, and a title game. Well, boy, that adds up to seven. So you don't really alter things
right.
a whole lot. The projections right now, and they're not going to be a surprise from Jerry Palm, who's usually pretty good about this, Alabama and Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl in one semifinal, Clemson and Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl in the other. For those who are curious, he's got LSU playing Central Florida in the Fiesta Bowl here on New Year's Day, New Year's morning, because it'll kick off at 11. And for those who are really curious about the Cheez-It Bowl, he's got Oklahoma State against California, which I think would be a really intriguing football game. I know, you know, a lot of times with those kind of games, are you really excited about that matchup? UCLA was in it last year. Josh Rosen decided not to play. But, look, Oklahoma State and California, I think, would really be a good football game. ASU, Jerry Palm has them going to Las Vegas to play Boise State in the Las Vegas Bowl. The key to where everything lines up in the Pac-12, and it's not set yet, is a game that will be played this Saturday. Stanford and Cal, I believe the game is in Berkeley. It was a game that was supposed to be played 2 weeks ago, but as we alluded to earlier in the show, the terrible wildfires and the air quality issues in the Bay Area wouldn't allow them to play that weekend. So they moved it to this weekend. It obviously does not have any impact on the Pac-12 title game. The winner of Washington-Utah will go to the Rose Bowl. The loser will go to the Alamo Bowl. But they will make everything else in the Pac-12 structure related to the bowls fall into place. Jerry Palm's got Cal going to here for the Cheez-It Bowl, ASU to the Las Vegas Bowl. If I can scan this very quickly, and I'm looking and looking and looking, Boston College would, or Oregon would go to the Sun Bowl in El Paso against Boston College, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Washington State would be in the Alamo Bowl. Really? Where would Utah go? Utah, I guess. He's assuming that Utah would lose the Pac-12 title game and they'd play in the Holiday Bowl against Northwestern. So it does appear that it will be either Las Vegas, and that's what a lot of people are leaning toward, or the Sun Bowl in El Paso. Overall, I would say, and I've hosted a call-in show, and Eric and I both remember a time in sports radio when they were all call-in shows. And eventually they went away from it, because not all the callers were all that interesting to listen to. I've had the pleasure, and it is still a pleasure, to host Sun Devil Sound Off on the radio. But boy, it's been a challenge some weeks, because you really, I can't tell you. Okay, here's a sample of what we've dealt with on this show this year. After the Colorado game, ASU loses at Colorado. They're 3-3. A gentleman called the show and called for a coaching change. He wanted Herm Edwards out. Six games, he wanted a coaching change. After the Devils won at USC, two callers called and complained about the fact that Ray Anderson hired his golfing buddy as head coach after a win. So it's been an interesting, I did it for the first 10 weeks. If the bowl game is the right bowl game, I'll do the call-in show after the bowl game. But I am just so tickled that the Herm Edwards era is off to the start it's off to. But I point out it's a start. And I know a lot of people are excited. They should be. They're going to get out and have a full recruiting cycle, and they're very well covered in terms of the coaching staff getting out and making recruiting contacts. It's really all I know about the recruiting process. But just the same, the future does look very bright for ASU football, but it's just the start. We are not at a point, and we're not going to be at a point for a while yet, where we can make a definitive declaration that what Ray Anderson and Herm Edwards are doing is working or not. And I think it's very important to just be patient, kind of step back a little bit, and let this process continue to play itself out. But so far, so good. Goody at the movies. We'll take a look back at the movies of 2018. And yeah, we're gonna get on Monday Night Football on the announce crew. That's next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com. It is Thursday, and that means AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic Bill Gutekunst joins us for his weekly visit. We're going to talk a kind of a big picture about the more significant movies of 2018, and then we're going to get into a new poll about NFL announce crews, and you probably won't be surprised who finished last in that grouping. I always sort of start with a little bit of TV trivia, and I don't have my usual trivia assortment today, Goody, but I will direct your attention to something that's on YouTube. It's an old 1960s, I may have talked to you about this before, a 60s series done by Aaron Spelling, who was the genius behind Charlie's Angels, Fantasy Island, The Love Boat. He did a series in the early 60s called Burke's Law, starred Gene Barry, who's a very suave actor. The premise was Amos Burke, the lead character, is the captain of homicide for the LAPD. He also happens to be a multimillionaire. And he goes to investigate every case in a chauffeur-driven Rolls Royce. But he came up the hard way. He loved police work, so he went to the academy, walked a beat, did all the things, paid his dues. And it's just, it's a really well-done show. It's funny. Gene Barry's terrific in it. So if you've never seen it, Goody, I would go just type in Burke's Law on YouTube. And I really think that's one of those, they did do a remake of it in the 90s, and it didn't come off as well. But there's your viewing tip.
I just like the guy of the idea, just like silent, you know, just gliding into a murder investigation in a limo.
Yeah, and he's, you know, I'm fascinated by that show. 2018, if I say to you 2018, pick a movie for me is the one that stands out the most, what's your answer?
Boy, I don't know. There's been some good, this happens every year, I think, and what happens is there will be one camp that says, what a terrible year for movies. And then there'll be another camp, and I'm usually almost always in this one that says, what a great year for movies. I'd have to say, gosh, if one movie, I don't think of it so much as a movie, as more of like a movement of movies. I think that there have been some movies from underrepresented audiences. Like I think Spike Lee had a really great, I don't know if you call it a comeback, but Black Klansman was, I thought, really good. And I thought also that some of the other stuff like the David Diggs movie, Blindspotting. Again, these are, you know, they talk about race, they talk about urbanization, they talk about a lot of things that people have been talking about, but not in so necessarily so overt a way. And I just think that that's really kind of a welcome change for this year. But there's also been like cool little stuff. Like, I would highly recommend to you a movie called Eighth Grade, which is about a girl who is in fact in eighth grade. And it is one of those movies that is almost too realistic for some people. Probably they're going to think, oh, wow, you know.
I saw something about that movie.
My kids actually saw it. My wife was in the other room yelling, like, how is this appropriate? And I was like, it's tough, they know already. And they're like, Mom, this is what it's like.
Well, let me go ahead and finish your thought on that. And I just had a follow-up question.
No, I think that every year it's tough because there's always the big giant movies. And, you know, like there was the Infinity War movie this year. And there's always going to be that. And there's always these like really little small movies like Eighth Grade. I mean, it stars nobody you've ever heard of and everything, but it's really good. I think the thing that we are missing and that we've been missing for a long time, and I've talked to a lot of directors about this, there's that sort of middle ground of they're not big blockbusters, but they star people that you've heard of. You know, I mean, they have sometimes big stars when they make a small movie or, you know, kind of that kind of thing. That's really gone away because it doesn't really make enough money to justify hiring the people that you've heard of. But and you can't make it so cheaply that you can just distribute it however you want to. And so, I mean, that's what we're really missing. I mean, that's ever since movies, you know, like Bonnie and Clyde and stuff like that. They all did that. And we just don't really have that anymore. So that's too bad.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'll give you we'll make this a quick one, and then we'll move on to the TV stuff I had. And I think you were the one that wrote this. Melissa McCarthy just, you know, you and I haven't visited about movies in a while on this show. She just did a dramatic role in a movie, and I remember reading a review, and I could swear you were the one that wrote it, that said this is really going to do a lot for her career because it's going to force her to kind of expand her reach.
It wasn't me, but I think that's true. And I think that I hope it does expand the reach. I think she's really talented. I think she's great. And this happens to comedians sometimes, you know, I mean, like they want to, you know, Jim Carrey does
you know, well, I'm tired of, you know, comedy. I want to do some drama. You know, even Robin Williams, you know, he really started doing more dramatic stuff, and he won an Oscar for doing
right.
that. And she's going to get nominated, but I think, but maybe it's a tough category. But she, I hope that that's great. It's great for her to expand what she's doing. I hope that she doesn't give up completely on comedy, which they sometimes do, because I think that she's great in this movie, but I think that no movie has really captured her real sort of the best thing she does about comedy. And the funniest thing that I think I've ever seen her do, she was really good in the movie Spy, but at the end of This Is 40, which she was just had a small role in, she played like the high school principal who and the kid gets in trouble or something. And she's like really bitter and mean. And at the end of it, they have outtakes. And there's this scene where she just sits there and tries to get Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann to break with just one insult after another, just words.
I can visualize dirty, it.
And it is, and they find, and they don't, they never break, and then finally they just like bust out laughing because it's so funny.
She is.
I wish she could. I mean, and good for her. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's great. She shouldn't be forced to do one thing just because she's good at one thing. I mean, evidently she's good at a lot of things.
Yeah.
Good for her.
But I
just hope that they don't leave that behind.
I got about 2 minutes, and I wanted to get this in. The website awfulannouncing.com came out with its poll, and this is among fans of their best and worst NFL announce teams. And I guess it's not going to come as a surprise. There are 15 announce teams on the networks in the NFL, and the team that finished dead last, Joe Tessitore, Jason Witten, and Booger McFarlane on Monday Night Football. I am not a fan of Joe Tessitore's. I think he's overly dramatic. In the Chiefs-Rams game, he must have said 15 times, this is an absolute classic. Yeah, Joe, like, we can't tell. Thanks very much, Joe. But here's the thing, Bill, and you and I know this is very well. Their ratings are up. That booth's not changing.
No, absolutely. Are you kidding? No. If the ratings are up, they not only will they accept the criticism that booth has gotten, and it's gotten a lot. I haven't actually heard of anybody that really likes it. They will welcome that criticism, because that all that does is make the sort of, you know, the kind of casual fan who hasn't really tuned in, wow, I want to see what all the fuss is over, you know?
And so, yeah.
I want to watch this. I think there are a million reasons. I cannot believe, and I don't for a minute, that the reasons ratings are up for Monday Night Football is because those guys are so good. I agree with Tessitore. Whenever I watch it, I feel like, maybe it's a slight, I don't know, but it makes me feel like I'm watching a college game.
Well, that's what he'd been doing.
I know, and that's why. I actually like Booger McFarlane. I wish they'd put him in the booth and just let Witten do, you know, whatever it is he's going to do. And I'm sure, you know, Witten knows more about football than any of us ever will, but he just can't seem to get it out, and he isn't willing to. I don't know. Monday Night Football, it's just such a shell of what it used to be. And
yeah.
It's a whole generation now that doesn't know that or remember that. And that's fine. I mean, it's sort of moved over to Sunday Night Football. But the great thing about Monday Night Football, as you will recall, is it wasn't just that it was a great announcing team. And sometimes it wasn't. They had some real dogs in there at the times, too. And not every game was great. That's not
right.
True. But it was an event, and it extended the weekend. And
right.
And now there's a game. There's some kind of big game on every night now somewhere, except for, like, you know, you can find football just about every night. You can certainly find basketball. But that was a societal shift when they went to Monday Night Football, when they extended the weekend by one day. That was a big deal, and I don't think it probably still doesn't get the credit it deserves for that. And maybe it's not credit. Maybe you should get blamed. But that,
I'd love to see somebody do a documentary on that from the cultural aspect, and someday somebody will. Okay, 30 seconds. The number one ranked team was Nance and Romo on CBS. I got a disagreement with that, too. I don't like Romo, because Romo thinks he's being funny and cute, and sometimes it doesn't come off funny and cute. He's better than he was last year, but the real problem for me is the fact that he's been somewhat successful. Why is Jason Witten doing Monday Night Football? Because ESPN wanted a Tony Romo. And now the other networks are all going to tell themselves, we got to go find a Romo, and they're going to put a bunch of untested guys in the booth. It's not fair to Witten to put him on Monday Night Football. He wasn't ready for it. But Nance and Romo as a team, I will admit Jim Nance is more energized with Tony Romo than he was with Sims. But overall, I don't think that's the best announce booth in the NFL. I still think it's Michaels and Collinsworth.
Yes, I think that's probably true. And I don't mind Romo, but I think that the thing that's a little bit unfair as well with that comparison with Whitten is Romo didn't just fall out of bed and go into the booth. They trained him for from the offseason on. He did practice games with Nance. He really worked hard. And, you know, sometimes I like him, sometimes I don't. I'm sort of like you there, but he's a world better than Whitten. I mean, but he didn't go into it blind the same way that Whitten did. But yeah,
right.
I think I don't like Collinsworth as much as I used to. I liked it better when he was a little more smarmy and smart alecky and was not like the principal owner of whatever statistics company it is that they quote from about 100 times a game, which seems to me to be a huge conflict of interest. But nobody seems to care about conflicts of interest anymore.
No.
So, I mean, that's like more power to him, I guess. But I like him better than that. But Michaels is, I mean, Michaels can be 100 years old and still be, you know, he sounds like he did 30 years ago. And he, that's, if he lives so long, that's what he's going to sound like 30 years from now.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but he's a constant.
Yeah, I'll give you a little tip. If you've never heard it, go back and listen to his call of Game 5 of the American League Championship Series in 1986 when he called Dave Henderson's home run that basically brought the Red Sox back from the dead. It's one of those, it'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck moments. He is...
You know, quickly, I want to say, I talked to him one time, you know, he went to Arizona State.
Right.
And I asked him one time, this stupid question that any young reporter would ask you. I said, well, you know, what's the best thing you covered? You most exciting, you know, it's got to be the hockey game or whatever. He said the most exciting thing that he ever covered was when he was at ASU, and the ASU men's it must have been the mile relay team. What was then the mile relay team? What now would be the 4x400?
Right.
And he said they set the world record, and they didn't just set it; they smashed it. He said it was the greatest thing he'd ever seen.
That doesn't surprise me, and I know which event he's talking about. Boy, we got to do, you know what? That's what we ought to do an interview on sometimes, is just talk about Al Michaels. In any event, we are out of time. Bill, appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you.
You got it. AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic, Bill Gutekunst. Let me get this in very quickly before we say bye-bye. This is championship weekend for a lot of the high school classes, and you know the best place to get high school football or any kind of high school sports info right here, sports360az.com. As they say in the business, we're all over it this weekend. So you want to know the latest on the title games, you stay right here. And you stay right here to catch the Brad Sesmat show, I know how to say his name, on a daily basis right here on sports360az.com. Excuse me, I'm going to go get my tongue retread. Bye.